Triple M Footy lives on Listener. Thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water. Triple M rocks the NRL. Breaking news, the big opinions, last minute goss from inside the locker room. If it's NRL news you need, get it right here. For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Hello everybody, great to have your company on a Saturday afternoon. 3 hours of pure rugby league joy stands ahead of us before we head to Bathurst, beautiful Carrington Park, where the Panthers will take on the Tigers. My name is Tony Squires, joined of course by Ryan Girdler, by Brent Reed, Wade Graham is on his way into the studio. In fact, I can see his young, fresh face as it opens the door right now. How are we all, Reedy? How are you going?
Good, mate. Good, good, good.
You've got a little shout out, I understand.
My niece, I mentioned my niece a couple of weeks ago.
You did.
Started a rugby league career. She scored a first try today, Ellie Hawkins, under the posts. And I've got to give her sister a shout out, Georgia, because I brushed her last time and she's a bit upset I didn't mention her. But Ellie scored a first try.
Well, what's the sister in terms of why does she deserve the shout?
Does she playing? She feels she does, Georgia.
Hey, Reedy, I find it really interesting how you feel like this is the platform for your shout outs, but you never do any on 360. Why not, mate?
Oh, it's a good question, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a good answer. How about a shout out next time on 360?
You we're just a bit break more relaxed
one of your
on here,
outs,
we're a bit more relaxed. It's a bit more relaxed atmosphere.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Just
I can imagine the reaction if I did a shout out
as long as it's not considered less important in your world. That's
no,
all.
No, fun, yeah. No.
Just a shout out to Cliffy, my grandson, where I understand he's only 8 weeks old, but still.
First try, that's pretty impressive. Under the sticks. It was a good effort, actually.
How do you know?
I saw a video. There's a video of it.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, father took a video of it.
All right. No. Hey, Wade, how are you going, buddy?
Good, thanks, Tone. How are you? How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Have you played at beautiful Carrington Park in Bathurst?
I have, actually. I think I have.
Oh, it's memorable then.
Yeah. Well, we beat the Panthers. I was playing for the Sharks. I remember it being not raining but really boggy, actually, the ground. It must have had some water during the week. And we were in there really late in the piece. We didn't spend too much time in Bathurst. That was the job of the Panthers. So, yeah, we were in there, got the 2 points and got out of there pretty quickly.
Oh, so you didn't have to do the kind of school thing and promote the game?
No. So we do – the Sharks take a game to Coffs Harbour.
Yep.
Each year now they have a deal with the Coffs Harbour Council up there, and the boys will go up and spend the week there, do the school visits, be out in the community. And it's great. It's great. When we get up there, normally they're lovely. It's a lovely town. They love their footy. They don't often get to see the NRL games at all, most of the townsfolk. So when there's an event like that, you can feel the energy and how excited they are for it. And we've got a good record up there at the moment. We've been there 2 years and won our two games. So there is a bit of extra motivation for the players out there. They feel like they're not only representing their area and their club, but the new fans and supporters that get behind them when they're there during the week. So it's pretty special when the NRL clubs take it out to the regional areas.
Yeah, Parramatta, of course, took it out to Darwin. Didn't work out so well for them last night. We're going to get to that in some detail. Brad Arthur, very strident in his criticism of his team, which isn't always the go of coaches, is it? They, operate differently, but for him it was an absolute
It was brutal, Tony.
It was like
brutal.
He couldn't hold back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he really couldn't. He was really emotional. So, yeah, lots to get through there.
We'll hear from that from him in a moment. What happens so far, charge sheet-wise, injuries, Reedy? Where are we at?
Not much, Tony, out of the week. And obviously out of Thursday night, there was a couple of incidents, the James Tedesco trip and Jarrell Brewer-Hargraves with the dangerous contact. They both cop fines.
They both should miss Anzac Day against the Dragons.
And out of last night, Bryce Cartwright was charged with dangerous contact on Mark Nichols, but again, it's just a fine. And obviously Dejan Arce, I think, filed the HIA last night, so he'll miss their next game, I'd imagine, with that 11-day stand-down period.
All right, so just before we roll on, what's your sister's name again? Because if we're going to give a shout-out, you better say no.
Her sister, Georgia.
Oh, her sister.
Yeah, her sister. Oh. Not my sister. I don't have a sister.
Okay.
Two brothers I got, so. Okay. Georgia Hawkins.
All right, we're learning far too much about your family. Yeah, Let's move on. Eels fans not so happy this morning. 44-16 the Dolphins got, and they led at halftime in Darwin. Tough conditions, 32 degrees, incredible humidity. As it is, they're used to it, I guess. They've played that game there for a few years now. But the Dolphins, 8 unanswered tries in the second half. I think, boys, what I might do is play you Coach Brad Arthur's view of it first, and then we can take that into our conversation as well.
Probably what's wrong with our season is we're a part-time footy team at the moment. We pick and choose when we want to play, when we want to make a tough choice or a soft choice. Yeah, because that second half wasn't good enough. It just all got too fast for us and it got too hard, and we gave up. Simple as that. There's only a handful of players in this club at the moment that pick to choose to come every week to play with the right mentality and toughness and want to be an 80-minute football and want to be an NRL player every week. We're spending a lot of time standing behind our goalposts. We've just got to harden up and defend one set. So I don't think it was a fitness issue. I think we're just making some soft choices at times when blokes, instead of taking the tough choice and making a decision on what's best for their teammates. Players have got to fix it. You can only talk about it so many times, Jay. Players have to fix it, don't they? They're the ones who've got to come and play and enjoy playing the 80 minutes, the good parts of it and the bad parts of it and the hard parts of it. But we enjoy everything else around it, but we're not enjoying the 80 minutes. And that's the bit we're getting paid to do.
Yes, so there's the coach. How does a player react to that? Only a handful of players, he says, turn up each week with the right attitude and desire. The players have to fix it.
Yeah, so I'm just taking that in. I didn't hear that. I watched the game, so I didn't hear his reaction, and just trying to get my thoughts gathered on it. I would say this has been bubbling away underneath the surface for a while. For him to come out so publicly and so strong and basically put his players on notice, the experienced coach he is, he would have had these conversations behind closed doors already, like in team meetings and videos after results that haven't gone their way. So that's pretty much a line in the sand now. He's basically said they haven't aimed up.
Yep.
They haven't aimed up consistently. They enjoy everything else that comes with the game, which I'm guessing is the ability to walk around town and get a little bit of notice and
healthy paycheck.
The healthy paycheck, and then unfortunately that they're happy to take all that, but then when it comes to getting the business done on the field, they just haven't been where they need to be. And I suppose for me, it's obviously been bubbling away from them for a while, but they've sort of been pushed to the back a little bit because of everything that's going on at South. And maybe the excuse, they lost Mitchell Moses, so they're struggling there with their, you know, leading playmaker being out. But that second half of that game where you'd say they were in control of that first half. They missed a goal kick, so they didn't go as far in front as they should have. But that second half, those tries, particularly the ones, you know, when you come through the ruck, middle, yeah. When you come through the middle, that's they're big alarm bells, because that's the one no-no as a strong defensive club. That teams do not come through you if you're a defensive club. And unfortunately for Parramatta, it was just all systems go through that middle of the field there, Gerds.
Yeah, it was a weird one, Wade, because you know, when they started the year pretty strongly, and then they had that win against Manly, which was a good hit out for them, and then they obviously lost Mitchell Moses, and there's a lot of clubs around at the moment that are losing key personnel. Like, you only need to look at the Dolphins and who didn't play for them last night with Hamaso, Farnsworth, Flegler, Kafusi. Like, the list goes on. Half their cap was actually sitting on the bench. And then they fell away, didn't they? That Tigers loss was a pretty poor one, and the Raiders one was diabolical. And then they found a way, they willed their win against the Cowboys, I thought, last week, were really brave and resilient and just found a way. And I was kind of expecting more of the same of that, because it felt like they just climbed out of that hole last week. And you know, in the first half, they weren't great. You could see that their back end of sets were poor. They were looking for easy options, but they were still kind of good enough. And the Dolphins were playing solid, but weren't playing great. They were still kind of the better side in the first half. And take nothing away from the Dolphins' performance in the second half. They were great. But how the Eels fell away in the second half, I don't think I've ever seen a performance quite like it. Like, you spoke about how they just went straight through, and the amount of guys that were just left laying on the ground after contact, their inability on contact to actually, like, win that part of the collision was just incredible. And it was the outside backs coming out of their own end that were just setting a platform. And then, you know, the Dolphins were just having a field day. And we just spoke about the amount of people that they had out, the talent that they actually had sitting on the sidelines. These were young guys that were coming in. The Bostocks, he was exceptional. Katoa was incredible. Young Max Plath came in and did a fantastic job. These are guys still, you know, earning their wages, still working the NRL out. And they put a side like the Eels to the absolute sword. And Mitchell Moses was out, we get that. But if you go through that side, the experience they had, you can understand Brad Arthur's frustration. But unfortunately, Reedy, the players need to be held accountable. But I get the feeling that there's going to be a lot of chat about the coach in the next couple of weeks as well.
Well, there already was Gerds. That's the issue. I mean, I think we spoke about it 3 weeks ago. And it's fine to say the players need to fix this and the players didn't aim up and the players didn't put in. But it's the coach's job to get them ready, to get them to aim up, to make sure they don't fade like they did in the second half the other day. And Brad's got, you know, Brad has to wear his share of responsibility for this as well. This side's in a window right now. Like they've got a lot of blokes who are around the 30, 31, 32 years old. The next 2 years are vital for them. You know, Reg, Junior Paulo, Mitch, Gutho. Like they're at a point now where they need to win, if not this year, next year or the year after, or the window will close. And I think the issue a lot of us have grappled with in the media and we'll grapple with now in light of this is whether Brad's the guy that can get them over the hump. I know he got them to a grand final a couple of years ago, but he's been there 11 years, and they made one grand final. They've been a finals footy team along the way, but they missed the finals last year. Their draw coming up, it's horrific. They go Manly, Broncos, Storm, South with Latrell back, Cronulla. That's five games, potentially all without Mitchell Moses. And he's tinkered with his halves week after week. He's played Blaze Talangi there at six. He played Dejan Arce there. He's going to have to change it again because Arce will miss the next game. And, you know, I think the issue is going to be, you're right, Gerds, in the next week or two, we're going to be talking about the coach. Because there's a bloke named Wayne Bennett sitting out there who would seem ready-made for this roster.
The one thing for me is, like, put Mitchell Moses back in that team. He's not saving tries through the middle. Like he's not defending in the middle, and it's a fair shot from the coach across, you know, his players to their attitude, and it seems to be their attitude not just to the game, but their preparation in and around their game, the week's preparation, and the one thing, sort of as from a player's point of view, would be it is easy to lose focus and get distracted with everything that comes outside of the footy, but you got to remember. It all comes to you because of the footy. You cannot mess with that 80-minute performance and how you go out there and play for your team, because without that and without playing at that level, all the stuff outside of footy, it doesn't come with it. So whatever you want to do in your week and whatever you enjoy doing in your week, the one thing as a player you need to get right is your 80-minute performance, because everything in your life stems from that.
I've got to say, Tony, the one thing is Parramatta are not a knee-jerk club. Like, they will not react to this result. They will take their time. They will look at the next couple of weeks. They won't rush anything because that's not the way they operate. And when they do make a decision on Brad, if it comes to that point, they are a club that will go through the front door with Brad. They won't go behind it. We've heard, you know, at South, obviously, we've heard the stories about, you know, Mel Meninga being sounded out. That won't happen at Parramatta because you've got a board that's united. South's a little bit split at the moment, I think. So if Brad's future is on the line, but if they decide to go down another path, they will go through the front door with Brad. He will know where he stands. And people, I just want to make it clear, people, when we talk about coaches being under pressure, sometimes people think it's personal. I love Brad. I love him as a bloke. I think he's a really good coach. He'll find a job somewhere else if he doesn't have this job. But the issue is whether he's run his course with this football team.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it takes a voice to get you to a certain stage of your career, and sometimes it takes a different voice to get you to that next level. And if there's a guy in the wings waiting like Wayne Bennett who has the reputation of doing that, taking good rosters and turning them into premiership-winning rosters, that's not going to help Brad's cause. The other thing I would say, Rudy, is that, you know, coaches these days, they're obviously judged on their wins and losses during the season, but they're also judged on the systems that they put in place. And when you come into periods where, and all clubs do, where they have injuries or Origin and suspension and things like that, you know, they're judged on the systems that they've put in place to bring the people through to fill those holes. And if you look at some of the other clubs that have got key injuries at the moment, the way they're responding, say, you know, how Penrith have responded without Cleary, how the Broncos have been able to sort of scratch and win games without the players they have had, even the Dolphins last night.
Melbourne had no Munster and kept winning.
The Eels, and they've done it last year as well, and everyone put down, you know, the suspension and the injury and all those things that they had to overcome last year. But what it showed me is their systems don't seem to be that strong because they don't seem to have players coming in like for like to be able to do the job and understanding, you know, what it takes to be a first-grade NRL player to play or represent that club. And I think that that is something else that will be taken into consideration.
Well, they've won one game in New South Wales Cup and Jersey Flag. One game, and that was last weekend.
Yep.
All right.
You mentioned some of the players that went well for the Dolphins. What about Trey Fuller?
Trey Fuller, yeah.
He was 27 years old. Yeah. He's outside the 30, gets dispensation to come in and play, and absolutely creams it.
He was
fun to watch,
yeah,
too.
It was good. He enjoyed it. Even that little short side, the grub of the double kick to set up that last try, yeah. It's a good story. You don't see it often, but you do see it, you know, in the NRL on occasion. The journeyman player has just persevered, hanging around in the lower grades, and then, you know, a certain amount of luck or injuries go his way. He gets an opportunity, and, you know, they play with a free spirit and a smile on their face because they've done it the hard way. So, yeah, congratulations to Trey Fuller.
Benny Tia, of course, who coaches there, he said that he's just, in terms of Queensland Cup, he's too good for that competition. You know, he's their man of the match every week and plays in that style. He was absolutely brilliant. The other name I wanted to mention, because he also carved up the Dragons a few weeks ago after being seemingly knocked out at halftime, was Jeremy Marshall King. Yeah. He was terrific.
Yeah.
Exceptional. Yeah, and young Katoa as well.
Katoa was unbelievable good.
Max Plath came in. Like Johnny Plath's young bloke, and Benny Tia's also been talking about him now for a couple of years, and he had a little bit of a opportunity in the early part of the season, then was suspended and then came back and just had an absolute belter last night. And everyone's talking about young Fuller, you know, they need to put it, like, you've got Hamaso at the fullback there. You know, this guy's only going to get limited chances because you've got one of the top five fullbacks at your club regardless. So maybe some other clubs come knocking, but yeah, they were outstanding last night.
We talk about this game and a lack of young halves, Tony. I mean, Isaiah Katoa, they've signed him long term. They extended him out recently. He is absolute diamond, Isaiah Katoa.
And before we move on from this game, it'd be remiss not to mention Jesse Bromwich playing 300 games, first ever to start.
Yep.
Start 300 games,
it's incredible.
In the front row. It's quite a record.
Still playing good footy too.
It's quite a record.
I forgot to ask you, just to wrap that up very quickly, has anybody got the red pen out? Now, Reedy told us what's coming up for the Eels, and we know that Mitch Moses isn't back for weeks and weeks, just yet. Is anybody putting a line through Parramatta?
Not yet. I think that, just saying off air before, like, I know the Parramatta players, they love Brad Arthur.
Yep.
So that those sort of comments and how hard he went at him, that would hurt them, and he would know exactly what he was doing, and he felt like the truth needed to be said, so I expect a response from him. Reedy said they have Manly. They have a good record against Manly for some reason. Gutho always goes back to the Northern Beaches where he's from and plays well. So I'm definitely seeing a response, but they need to keep consistently improving, particularly in that defence. Like some of those tries last night, that's alarm bells ringing.
They can't win the comp, Tone.
Yep.
Yeah. They could maybe squeeze into the eight, but they can't win the comp.
All right, Ryan, you haven't got the red pen out yet?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay. All right. For the Panthers, four grand finals in a row, three premierships in succession. Each year they lose somebody. It's just the way of the world, and they manage to cover over those holes and excel year after year. But is this the huge one? James Fisher-Harris, Ryan Girdler, it's compassionate reasons. He's heading back to New Zealand.
Oh, Tony, took me a couple of days. I have to be honest, this one hurt. This one really hurt. And I know the whole Penrith community are so fond of this guy because of what he provides. And anyone that in the inner sanctum knows what he means to that club. We've lost some, you know, really talented people over the last 3 or 4 years. But I don't think we've lost anyone that actually gives what James gives to that organisation. I think that, you know, every time it would come that, you know, Burton or Crichton or Kickow or Appy, these guys were leaving, you go, oh, that's unfortunate. But I always sort of fell back on that those four pillars, I believe, that James, Isaiah Yeo, Nathan Cleary and Dylan Edwards. I always thought while they've got those guys, those core senior leaders that drive the standards out there, the club's in good hands.
Yeah.
And I know that there's guys like Liam Martin and Moses. I know those guys and how they contribute. But when I look at that club, I see those four guys and identify them as the true leaders. And to have a guy in the middle like that, to play every week the way that he does, to work so hard on his game and to be the guy that everyone, when they go into a big game, looks at to know that we're okay because he's there. Mm-hmm. He's that guy. He's also a guy that you can just see that makes players around him better. and young forwards coming up. The legacy, he'll leave a legacy at that club because of, you know, young forwards would be coming through the system and watching how he trains and prepares and his attitude towards how he handles different situations. Like, I remember hearing stories about him when he first came into the top 30 and was just like ironing people out at training. Like, no one wanted to train with him because he was just hurting people midweek. And you can just see he's taken that mentality his whole career. He only knows one way. And look, I think it's beautiful that Penrith have allowed this to happen. And it's great for him to go back there to New Zealand and spend that time with his family at the back end of his career. But it's also a beautiful gesture from the club because they weren't prepared for this, Tony. Like all those other guys that have been able to leave, they've known it was coming. They've had 12 months to prepare. They know what their junior systems are. They know who's coming on the market. They probably do that better than any other club in the competition, to be fair. That's why they're where they are. This has come as a real surprise. They're not prepared, and they're just not going to be able to find a replacement for him, unfortunately.
It's interesting, really, exactly big what loss. Gerd says. There were no rumblings. There was no hints. It just all happened. And there's still obviously a lot of love between the two parties.
Well, it just happened so quickly, Tony. Basically happened over the course of 3 days. And it's interesting. You know, we've been writing Penrith off probably a year or two now, saying at some point they're going to lose too many players to stay where they are. But it's folly, I think, because as I said, they lose Crichton, they lose Kickow, and they're still there. They're still in the mix. They're still winning premierships. So as hard as he is to replace, and he will be really hard to replace, but there's obviously talk of hit lists and other players they're going to target. For me, whatever they've got, Dylan Edwards and Nathan Cleary and Liam Martin and Moses Leota, they're not going to struggle. They're going to be in the mix. So, you know, but I applaud them. I wrote a column today about it saying, you know, I think a lot of clubs can take a lesson from Penrith and how they handled this, because they could have made him stay. They could have demanded another player in return. They could have asked for a transfer fee. But for all the service he's given them, the greatest way they could reward that was to honour him by letting him go. So I applaud Penrith for the way they handled it.
What about the Warriors? What does it mean for them?
Well, I think they actually... it's a deal that's fallen in their lap. They have the great relationship because of Andrew Webster being at the club, and you know, and James wants to go back to New Zealand. And I would say he wouldn't even be on as much money that Adam Fanua Blake was when they granted his relief. So they probably have a little bit of money on top. But again, I just echo like Reedy's thoughts when this when the news came through. It was a bombshell, really, because one, you know, the caliber of player and the club he's leaving, he's won 3 premierships in a row at, and two, there was no noise about it, and this is pure speculation and just my take on the situation. I'm not being within that club, but you have to assume that as soon as, you know, in James's heart, he must have been thinking, if there's an opportunity to go back and finish my back into my career in New Zealand, I'll take that. But there wasn't an opportunity. But at the moment Adam Fanua Blake left and that opening came up, I think he looked at it and went, well, this could be it. And that was a long time ago, and I actually think it's probably taken him this amount of time to, you know, have the conversations with his family and to build up the conviction in himself and to say, yeah, I'm going to walk into Ivan and ask if this is what can happen. And again, it's not really even the respect of him as a player that I think the Penrith Panthers have allowed this to happen. I think it's the respect of him as a man. You talk about players doing their job, but this is a guy who has actually done his job. Mm-hmm. Every day he's walked in that door, not just as a senior player and as a player and in his preparation, but he's delivered. He's delivered 3 premierships to the club.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think he's walked in. It took as soon as the Adam Fanua Blake move happened, I think he was thinking about it, and then the time spent would have been him, yeah, again, convincing himself this was the right move. And then I think he walked into Ivan and said, mate, this is what I want to do. Ivan obviously knows him as a person and go, well, if this is what you want, you know, we're going to honour your service and everything you've done at the club by making it happen. And then no wonder it moved so quick. Andrew Webster would have got the phone call and went, well, yes, 100%, we'll take him. And then
they've already painted a mural. And
the 2 footy managers would have got involved, the 2 CEOs, done. So it's respect to the Panthers. James Fisher-Harris, he deserves to finish his career the way he wants, not just because of what he's achieved on the field, but because of the person he is off the field. I don't think... he's an easy guy to manage, right? He's an easy guy to be a coach of. He's an easy guy to have in your club because of the respect and, you know, the person he is and his character. So good on him. We wish him all the best over there in New Zealand. And, yeah, boy, hasn't it just made Penrith a little bit more harder this year? You know, one teammate you want to play for would be him. So, wow.
And Wado, just for the Warriors fans that are, you know, obviously just trying to get their head around the difference between Adam Fanua-Blake, who's a world-class prop, and James Fisher-Harris. When I think about the comparison with those two, I mean, you said it earlier, James has delivered 3 premierships. He knows what it takes to deliver premierships, and there's only a certain amount of props that have an influence on a team that lead them to a title, and he's one of those guys. And I would also say, like, with no disrespect to Adden, he's moved around. He seems to me like a little bit of a mercenary. He moves around. He doesn't get that connected to the club. He's happy to go where he needs to go for his personal reasons. They're bringing a guy in that's going to change the fabric of their organisation.
Yep.
Not just on a weekend. You know, they're going to bring a guy in there that, one, any other forward in the comp's going to want to play with, and two, is just going to actually change what that club does on a Monday to Friday in relation to, you know, work ethic, detail around their work, putting in extras. He just looks at people and they just know what needs to be done. So it's a huge pickup for the Warriors, and, you know, they're my second team, so that's okay.
Are they your second team? Well, they got beaten by
my first team.
The Dragons, 30-12 winners over the Warriors last night in Wollongong, a result that nobody really expected. It was a game of rugby league that, as a Dragons fan, I could watch in its entirety. Didn't have to watch sneak out the door and just listen around the corner. I was fully committed, as was that team, both defensively and in attack. Showed some great signs for the Red and Whites. It was a terrific win, Gerds.
Yeah, it brought me great joy, Tone, calling that one last night and seeing a full hull. The hill was full down there at Wynn Stadium, and yeah, they just they got treated to an absolute performance by their beloved Dragons. And yeah, it started out with just some really good defence on their own line, some goal line defence. The Warriors are a great attacking outfit, and the Dragons made a few early errors and invited them down to their end of the field, and they put up a fair bit of resistance. The Warriors found a way through with a beautiful play. Sean Johnson scored a try, and it was kind of like, oh, they need to steady themselves here. But you could just see that the effort and the energy by the Dragons was there. It was obvious, and they were definitely going to compete. So it felt like we had a really good contest on our hands. And then I just thought they wrestled back momentum. They were happy to sort of get to the end of their set, kick long. They had this mentality where it was just really professional. And then I thought Shane Flanagan pulled the trigger. He brought on Blake Laurie and Jack DeBell, and that, I thought, changed the game. They just started finding some space around the ruck, and on the back of what their outside five had been able to do with the meterage coming out of yardage, those guys started really putting a dent in. They started generating some ruck speed, and they started winning that part of the game. Then all of a sudden, Ben Hunt was kicking, attacking kicks to corners, which brought in their outside backs, and of course, Zach Lomax, who just converted a couple of those opportunities for them. So just a really good 80-minute performance. They weren't dominant for 80 minutes. They were probably dominant for about 65, but it was still an 80-minute performance. And you just need to look at that. I don't know what the score was with about 10 minutes to go when Tohu Harris was actually over the line. And the try wouldn't have really had an impact on the result. There was like 5 Dragons players that got there and basically said, not on our watch. You know, we're going to close this one out completely and drove him back into the field of play. So there was lots of little moments like that, lots to like from the Dragons' performance last night, Tony, and yeah, I'm sure you guys all enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it. We're going to speak with, going to speak with Cole Flanagan in roughly 20 or 25 minutes. But what is so good about them, seemingly anyway, this year, the difference is it's the old thing, simple, run hard, tackle hard. They really are intense in terms of the way they take the ball up.
Are you reading my sheet here? No, well, this is a Shane Flanagan coach football team, and they're not even the finished product yet. They still have some improvement, and they're going to have some ups and downs throughout this year, but he has them trending in the right direction. And we can, you know, I was coached by Flano for 8 or 9 years, so I've had a great experience under him, and you just need to look at some of the comments he's made towards their players in the game and, you know, the improvement. Let's take Zach Lomax, right, for an instant. Mm-hmm. At the start of the year, he didn't want to play on the wing. Flano's got this, like, really good ability of just narrowing people's focus giving them simple jobs to do in the game and allowing their confidence to grow and as a player and to improve as a player over time. So I'm telling you, his only two things for Zach Lomax when he put him on the wing would have been carry hard out of the backfield and chase kicks as hard as you can and compete for kicks. Yeah, he would live with a couple of defensive decisions that he could improve over time, but just get those two things right in your footy and the rest will come on the back of that. So he did that for a month of footy, the opening rounds of the competition. Now the next part of his game is starting to take off. The skill with his kicking, he's actually catching balls in the air with, and not just competing them, or he's getting up there and bringing them down and setting up tries. And all of a sudden, you're in this good vein of form as a player, and you don't know, like you don't realize where it came from. It's just easy again. It's because you got the basics of your game right, and that's what Flano does. He without knowing it as a player, he gets you to focus on the basics, do the basics right. And then all of a sudden, the eights and the nines out of 10 games start happening because those moments come for you because you're in the right place. And the other thing, which is a Shane Flanagan coach team, is you need to be willing and committed in defense. Like he'll wear the misreads, but if you're not putting your body in front and putting your body in the line, that's where he has an issue with it. And we heard it with when he moved Tyrell Sloan a couple of weeks ago to the wing. He just said, mate, you need to be in that tackle. You need to get down there and put your body on the line for your team and put your body in front of people sometimes when you don't want to do it, because that's what it takes in the NRL. You need to stop tries and you need to show commitment in defense. And it's not surprising the way they're playing and the way they look like when they're playing, because this is what Flano does and this is how he coaches.
And you got the reaction out of Tyrell Sloan. I mean, he's been great since, you know, obviously that shift happened in game. I'll tell you where it might help him as well, Tony. I mean, obviously they've made bids to sign a lot of players and they haven't really struck many blows. But I reckon players are probably looking at it now going, this team's on the improve. This is a team that's better than maybe a lot of people thought they'd be. And players, you know better than me, Wade and Rook Gerds, players that see that and think, maybe this isn't such a bad side to be part of down the track. So I know that they've got offers out there for a few players at the moment. I reckon those players be watching it and maybe they'd be thinking about it more realistically than maybe they were 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Well, just another thing with Flano was underrated was his ability to recruit. Like, I know I haven't landed any big fish at the moment, but in my time at Cronulla, every year you added a piece of the puzzle that just made us better and improved. And it wasn't just necessarily about the player on the field. It was also how they added to the locker room, their characters, is they suit our team, were they going to fit in with our squad. And if you go from a timeline from, say, 2011 when I first signed to 2016, the roster was, I wouldn't say completely different, but every year he just added someone that added to the group and added to the team. And, you know, eventually, you know, he got the job done and delivered a premiership to the Sharks.
I guess we can't talk. And all the talk has been about Zach Lomax, and he played his 100th game last night. And his performance, as you said, all year has been terrific. He's great. Above his head with his hands, it's the glue. It's fantastic the way he does that. The kick, from outside the 40, the 2-point field goal into the wind just before halftime as well was another brilliant move.
Yeah, and like the knock on Zach has never been his ability and his skill level, because some of the stuff he could do, you know, we always saw the left hand fen and the right arm
flick
offload, the flick pass. The only thing in the past, he was putting the cart before the horse. When he was trying to go straight to the flick or straight to the highlight play instead of building your game up. And that's what he's done this season. He's built it up off carrying hard out of the backfield and just competing on that kick chase. And because the more often he's doing that and going after the game and going after the hard parts of the game, all of a sudden you're in the right place at the right time and your skill takes over, your talent takes over. And we're seeing that now in his footy. Like some of those catches above his head, time to land on the ground, beats the fullback all ends up, has time to one-hand offload to, you know, the support. It's just, he's a quality player and his talents are coming out now and his skill is coming out now because he's got the hard parts of the footy right. And, yeah, hopefully he keeps going because he's on a trajectory that, you know, there's only one way it goes, and it's representative football.
We'll keep going for this season anyway, next season.
Wait, it's hard not to think that maybe he should have kept his powder dry because, look, I know there were some things that happened at the start of the year and he was playing out of position and It wasn't a financial thing because he's obviously taken a pay cut to leave that club. But sometimes it takes the right voice to get the best out of the individual. And he's obviously had three or four coaches down there, haven't really been able to get him to a certain level where he's sort of shown any of it, the potential that was promised back from when he was coming through the system. And all of a sudden, you know, as you said, the foundations have been built. He's played out of position. He's now been moved back into the position he likes, and he's still having the same sort of impact. He's obviously got the right voice there. They're at a club that seemed to be headed in the right direction. Do you think that maybe he's having second thoughts about the decision that he's made a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, it's unsure to know the exact situation. You have to feel like there's more going on there for him to push so hard.
Think there's more to it.
I was going to say, I don't think it's just a positional thing. I think he's wanted out.
But he needs to change?
Yeah, I think he needs to change. He's decided he needs to change.
Yeah, but did he decide he needed to change because the merry-go-round, the coaches have always maybe told him the wrong thing and maybe built him up and maybe shown him a little extra love, and then Funno comes in, doesn't give him the extra love, gives him a bit of like
tough love,
a bit of tough love, a bit of some honesty, and he doesn't like it to start with, but he goes, right, I'm going to do the right thing, I'm going to apply myself and listen to the coach, and now he comes out the other side. Like, there is a level of maturity that comes with you with that experience and going through the hard times and facing the adversity and coming out the other side. And you look back and go, hang on a minute, that adversity and that tough love and those honest conversations, they were exactly what I needed. And you, instead of feeling negative towards everything that happened, you look back with gratitude. You actually go, well, man, I'm lucky that happened to me because it put me in a better place and it made me a better player. So,
yep.
Time will tell, but indeed, he's certainly playing the best footy he's played.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
Welcome to Tony's Spotting Quiz.
I've really missed this. Really
they still did it without your tone. It was so weird.
Really?
Wasn't the same. No. Got to be honest.
How'd you go?
I didn't answer a question in protest. I went all Gundy on it.
Well, Seamus was cheating too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was stealing a copy of the answer.
I could believe that. I could see that.
Was he Googling or no, just stolen the answers?
No, he was looking over shoulders at the questions and the answers. Because
yeah, he's a sneak.
I've always thought that about him.
The hosts were pretty rookie sneak, and they just left everything out in the open.
That is shameless.
Very ordinary. Yep. Should get a 1 or 2 week suspension for that.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, none of that this time around. Very simple quiz for you, a little bit of what's going on in the sporting week and a little bit about what's happening today. Are we ready? We'll use names as your buzzers. Test those for me, please.
Waiter.
Ready.
Skipper.
Ah, so glad I can skipper. Which Australian cricketer was named Wisden's Player of the Year this week?
Waiter.
Yes, Waiter.
Cummins.
Pat Cummins, correct. The first one in 12 years. I think Michael Clarke was the last one. A bit of extra information for you.
That was a pure guess.
That should have been a bonus point.
Pure guess, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, why would you say that? I mean, you're ahead.
Yeah.
I'm,
you should take the point off in time.
Who knows? Well, the points don't really matter, do they? Because I've got no freaking idea.
Actually, that's the other thing that threw us off. Seamus started keeping score.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, he's needy.
Yeah.
Really needy. Who knocked Arsenal out of the Champions
Skipper.
League?
Skipper.
Yes, Skipper.
Oh, my God, Tony. That's a terrible question. That's a nasty question for Brent and myself. And I refuse to answer it.
was it Tottenham?
No,
yeah, it was
no,
Tottenham. No, that would have been
worse.
Is
it both playing the Champions
League? It was Bayern Munich, 1-0. Like,
oh, my God.
I'm sorry,
a couple of early mornings for nothing.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I don't know. What great, late great halfback emerged from the country town? No, I'm going to go the other way. Tom Perundonikos hailed from which country town will be mentioned a lot today on Triple M?
Reedy?
Yes, Reedy.
Was it Bathurst?
Yes.
Was it? I didn't
know. Bathurst.
That was a guess.
True or false? The ground record at Carrington Park, where the game this afternoon we played, was 19,148. Wait, I haven't finished the question. 19,148 for an Elton John concert.
That's false.
It is false. It was 19,149.
Yeah.
For an Elton John concert?
It was an Elton John concert.
Bathurst.
Yeah, it was the
good. I would have said true just because there was so much detail in that question.
See, I was counting on somebody saying true, and because I changed the number by one, I thought it would be hilarious, but you ruined it. It was the 2020 Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour. Swim star Ariane Titmus said Olympic athletes should get what?
Ready?
Yes, ready.
Cash.
Yes.
Money.
And they should.
Yeah.
Well, he, well given the money that the Olympic
athletes do.
Pardon?
Track and field athletes
yeah,
do.
That's right. Yeah. So, the swimmers.
What do the swimmers just keep all the cash themselves?
Yeah. They should. They get nothing.
Yeah.
Legendary surfer competed for the last time in Australian
Skipper.
Waters? Yes, Skipper.
Kelly.
Kelly Slater, age 52, was at Margaret River. He has applied for a wild card, I think, at
He'll probably come back, Pro.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's retired before, but anyway.
Yeah, he has a bit. Who won the green jacket at the Masters? Oh, well, who was that?
You can go.
Really?
You're wearing a Scotty Scheffler top.
That's Scotty
Scheffler. Yeah. I deferred to him.
Scotty Scheffler, brilliant player.
Great player.
Unbelievable at the moment.
Has had a charisma bypass. But can play. Who won between the Dragons and the Warriors?
Skipper. Mighty Dragons.
Mighty Dragons, which makes you the winner. Last night it was the Dragons and the Warriors, 30-12 winners. Surprise result for the Dragons at beautiful Wollongong. And one of the men who was instrumental in that win is Kyle Flanagan. He joins us right now. Congratulations, mate.
Cheers, boys. Thanks for having me on. It was definitely a good win down at Wynn. And yeah, always good times.
You can see the, kind of the measure of how good the win was by the celebrations in the dressing room. Now, I watch every time there is a win and have a look at the song being sung in the rooms. Last night when the Saints go marching in was sung with incredible fervour.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think, you know, I guess for me personally, it's been a while since I've been able to sing a song every week. So, to be able to sing the song after the game, mate, and he put so much hard work in during the week, and back-to-back win the first time this year was pretty special for us, and it's always good times.
Cole, they're a side everyone expects to be in the fight to win potentially a premiership this year. What does it say about you guys that you're able to beat them and beat them so well, so comprehensively?
Yeah, we're looking forward to versing the Warriors, obviously. They've been in good form the last couple of weeks, and we were up for the challenge, and we really wanted to make it a physical game, and that's our style of footy and that's our DNA. So to be able to test ourselves like up against the Warriors was a big challenge for us. And, very important to get back-to-back wins the first time this year.
Hey, Cole, you're a young bloke, still early in your NRL career, been to a few different clubs. What is it that makes you feel so settled at the Dragons?
Been to a couple of clubs now and... I guess I just feel confident in my role and, not overplaying my hand. Been really enjoying playing alongside Benny Hunt and, enjoy driving down to Wollongong every day and, hanging at the beach. And it's a good group of boys down there. So it's been a good start so far and I'm happy that can continue to build throughout the year.
Yeah, you mentioned, playing alongside Ben Hunt. I really enjoyed the interview post-game last night and your reaction to this question from Wendell Saylor.
Hey, Kyle, it's Del, mate. Hey, just watching you with Ben Hunt, mate, you compliment each other. How good's he been for your football? And, mate, full credit to you. You're playing really good football yourself, mate.
Cheers, mate. I know you tipped us a run last, but I appreciate that.
Put a shot on the big man. Well played.
That's gold. Not often has he lost the words. That's gold.
That's mate. Right.
But I wait out here, mate. Just on your old man, Shane. Coached me a while ago at Cronulla. You were in that system. Spent an extended time on the sideline, but he's back now. Has there been a change in his style or his temperament towards the game? Starting with, does he smile at all anymore or is he still grumpy?
Well, as you know, Waddo, he got some brand new teeth after 2016 grand final, mate. So he doesn't mind a smile now, mate. So I guess a few grandkids along the way has probably made him a bit calmer. But as you said before, mate, on the show, his style of the way that he coaches hasn't changed. And, it's all around defence and hard work and kicking long. And, I think our style of football is starting to come out in our games.
Cole, going good.
Yeah, sorry. You just spoke about your defence, Cole. I thought that was an outstanding part of your game last night. Obviously, you spoke about the combination with Benny Hunt, you guys coming together for a lot of those tries. You're there when he's caught up and you need to finish off the set. But last night, you were really tested defensively. The Warriors, they shift the ball around, they hit their points really well, and you must have been happy with the way that you handled what came at you yesterday.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think, the Warriors are probably the best attacking team when you're defending your trial line. Like, they run, isolated halves quite a lot, so that was a big focus for us going into the game, and I think the most pleasing thing was the way that, we defended together on the trial line and, turned away a few times, so We didn't start that great, but yeah, as you said, mate, we turned it away quite well.
Kyle, I've got to ask about Zach Lomax. He's sort of been the man of the moment, well, the man of the past month, really. What's it been like around training? Are you sticking it to him? Are you sort of giving him a lot of crap, or you're sort of giving him his space? Like, what's it like? What's it like being around him during this past month when everything's been going on?
Yeah, mate, we're absolutely giving it to him. Plenty of stick, but but that's Zach, you know, since I've been at the club. So, you know, we're always getting him stick, you know, throughout the preseason as well. So, and I think he's thriving off it, obviously. You know, we love going out there and playing with him. He's such a competitor, and, you know, he's a good bloke to have around training, and, you know, he's very well liked within the group. So, you know, hopefully that form for him can continue.
What's the plan for your day off, Kyle? Are you just going to kick the feet up, mate, go hang out in the missus' house or what?
Right, I'm actually just pulled up at Kembla Grange Racecourse. My horse is about to run in a couple of races, so wish me luck.
Is he any chance or what?
It's not Winks, but
Hey, don't worry, mate. Keep the tip to yourself, don't worry.
Hey, Kyle, mate, next week, back to the footy just quickly. Next week, big game always, the Anzac Day Clash, something you'd be looking forward to, I'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think I got to play in one for the Roosters back when it was COVID. So, yeah, we're looking forward to class. Obviously, what it means, you know, playing on an exact day and, you know, what it means in itself and have your family in the crowd is going to be a pretty special achievement. And, yeah, hopefully, you know, put another win on the board.
Mate, you said earlier when we were talking about the physical style of football that you played, that it's in your DNA. It hasn't always been in the Dragons' DNA, certainly of late, but that is what the blueprint of what you want it to become.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think when we sat down in the preseason and probably looked at, you know, what can our strengths be of our footy team was probably, you know, our defence and hard running. And you know, I think we've got the players to do that. You look at our back five, you know, Mika and Sully and a couple of the others, you know, they like to carry the ball strong, and defensively we've got guys that, you know, like to go after their work. So those are two things that we identified in the preseason and really trained towards, and, you know, like to think it's going to continue to come out in games.
And it'd be nice to see Wollongong becoming a very tough place for other teams to visit.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think, you know, the old man obviously likes to always talk about 2016 and, you know, how he made, you know, Shark Park a bit of a fortress. So I like to think he's got, you know, a similar mentality regarding wins to Adam and, you know, teams that don't want to come here and play against us. So it's been 2 from 2 there, and hopefully that can continue.
We've got to ask, what's your horse's name, Kyle?
Stay Brave.
Is it a mud runner? Because it's been pretty wet down there, hasn't it?
It's a mudder.
I'd like to think so. I'm just having a look at the track now, mate. Not too much about racing, but hopefully it runs well.
Okay, Stay Brave.
Stay Brave.
I love
strong
it.
Name.
Well, if it's been raining, it's wet. Let's just say that.
Kyle Flanagan, great to talk to you. Congratulations on the season thus far, and good luck for what lies ahead.
Cheers, boys. Thank you very much.
There he is, Kyle Flanagan, who is eking, as I said to you earlier, Gerds. He's one of those guys that the talent he has, he's grabbing and using every ounce of it at the moment.
Yeah, they're going good, and that combination with Benny Hunt, he's certainly building, and they have the foundations there, as you said, the DNA of their footy. They carry out of the backfield, let the halves kick into good field positions. You don't need to be overly creative, just play what's in front and what the opposition offer you, and that's enough to get your boy in most footy games. So they're growing in confidence. Shane Flanagan's certainly having an effect, and yeah, they're sitting good on, what is it, 4 wins now?
Feeling a little bit peckish, especially after Brent Reed has told us of your culinary efforts. What's going on, fella?
I bought an air fryer, Tone. Join the revolution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been mulling it over for a long time.
Okay.
I sent my wife a text on Friday. I said, I'm going to buy an air fryer.
Did you? Uh-huh. Did you have to do like a financial breakdown for her, like you did before you bought?
She trusted me.
Really?
Wasn't that a mistake?
Wow. She trusted.
Do you make all your decisions with her over text? Is that how it all happens?
Well, generally, I consult her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how have you gone with the air fryer?
I cooked some chips in it. They went all right. Yeah. And then I cooked a butterfly chicken for dinner last night.
Okay.
I think I overcooked
dry.
It. I think I overcooked it a little bit. Yeah.
The only thing with the air fryer is when you cook, mate, you got to cook with some love and some care. Like,
yeah, I appreciate that.
There's none of that with the air fryer.
It's a convenience
just cold
thing,
and
though.
Callous, mate. Like,
yeah,
if you're going to cook for your family, put some effort into it.
But that's
cold and callous.
This is when you don't have time. You just chuck things, apparently, I don't know, in the air fryer, cooks it up.
Yeah, West Bank. Not a fan of that.
I love it. Cold and Callous, that's the name of my law firm. you're by way of being a bit of a chef, aren't you, Wade?
I love cooking. Sunday, we have a little bit of a routine there. We take the boys to Alexandria. They play their ice hockey, and then there's the meat emporium around the corner, which is like a wholesale butcher. We go in there, find what we want for dinner, take it home, and then Sunday arvo's spent at home with the family cooking. But I've always cooked throughout my career, and I love it.
So nice. Good. Did you get any your wife is from...
Oh, she's French-Canadian, so she has a culture. Yeah. We do like, now that autumn's rolling, some boeuf bourguignon and some slow-cooked lamb shanks,
That's beef bourguignon for the rest of us.
slow-cooked lamb shoulder. We were just telling Gerd before how to cook it. And talking to our producer, maybe in the future we might have maybe Saturday recipe, Wade's Saturday recipe moving forward, what I'm going to cook on the Sunday.
I love that.
I'll get a sponsor for it.
Yeah.
Maybe an air fryer company.
No, there will be no air frying at all.
Cold and Callous.
Absolutely. Tony's law first.
Hello. All right, the Storm 18 over the Roosters 12. One of those games, the Roosters, Trent Robinson wasn't happy when it came back, of course. He wasn't bagging his players. He kind of went for interpretations of rules. In fact, let's begin by having to listen to what he had to say after the game.
It's really clear. The rules are really clear. They came out at the end of the year, and if you lend weight to a tackler in a stationary or forward momentum, then it'll either be stopped, or if it's in a try scoring, it'll be a penalty. It was really simple. He runs in from a distance, lends weight, touches his player and Jenko, and then goes over and scores. Did he lend weight to the play? Yes, he did. Like, it's not that hard. It was really clear. And then same at the end. We just had 7 or 8 minutes from Graham Annesley on disruptors and kick contests. Connor Watson was looking at the ball, standing in the position. Remus can go for the ball, that's fine. But he goes over the back of him, stops going for the ball, and pushes Manu in the back because he lost balance. But you can't, if you're not going for the ball, you can't contact our player without going for the contest. That's a disruptor. Like, it's really simple, the rules. Both of them were really clear.
Not happy. This, of course, was he was talking about Nelson Asavasolomona coming through. And even though Nelson did seem to get to the back of him and then pull out immediately, is it supposed to be black and white? Is this one of those ones that there is grey and that's the problem?
Well, I've got to say, Graham Annesley, the NRL head of football, has come out and said, after listening to the audio from the bunker, he's satisfied with the way both those incidents were handled. And look,
he was satisfied with the discussion between the referee and the bunker. He's not necessarily saying the decisions were 100% right.
Well, I think
right
he's
yet,
reserving
he?
His judgment on that, but he's satisfied with the way it was handled. I've got to say, Tone, and I can understand his frustrations, but they got plenty of decisions went their way. There was a Michael Jennings looked like a knock on in the lead up to one try. Lindsay Collins
that's not the point they read.
Well, it is the point, Gerd. Because
not
what's
the
happened
point.
Is Robbo's come in a couple of press conferences now and they've lost.
Yeah.
And he's been pretty outspoken about decisions in the game.
Well, the rubber, the green
didn't go totally against him.
He's actually right. The problem isn't what's going on the week. The problem is we decide as a game to bring in all these ridiculous rules every year and no one really understands them. So I'm with you, Rudy. Like, there was other situations during that contest that the Roosters could have done a lot better if they wanted to win that game. I think everyone agrees. But Robbo's 100% right in his analysis of those two situations. Now, I believe, common sense was applied. We've got a referee up there. I think it might have been Sutton, who's obviously got a lot of experience in the game. So the right guy was there. He used his discretion and he awarded both of them tries. And they are tries. They're tries to everyone. But the fact that the game brings in rules,
the disruptor.
that Robbo actually is aligned with and says, yeah, well, if you're going to bring it in as a rule, let's actually then, upkeep the rule and let's let all the officials know that it is a rule that we actually need to make a decision on.
But the NRL is saying those decisions weren't necessarily wrong. So if that's the case...
Well, Nelson had his hands...
They're not saying
well,
they're not necessarily
the
right either.
Nelson had his hands on the back. You could see that.
Yeah, there were three defenders there, Gerds.
There's
so
discretion.
You're making excuses.
So I'm all for discretion.
Well, and it should be that. I think he has some form of discretion around that...
If there's already momentum,
ruling,
I think...
Using discretion.
That ruling where a try's involved, he has some discretion around that.
Well, sometimes they use discretion, Rudy, and sometimes they're black and white. And that's what we need to find. We need to find that middle ground.
Listen, let's just all agree that this disrupt the rule is only disrupting
that's
your enjoyment of the game.
That is a nonsensical rule.
The whole,
I agree.
The whole point of the game is to disrupt your opposition to try and get the ball back and get your advantage. And it's so subjective. That one, it should be in this quarter season review and just put on the back burner and just let the boys compete how they feel like they need to compete without making errors or without acting in a foul manner. So that's my end. I thought it was a pretty clunky game, to be honest. Yeah. I was out there at Allianz, and we talked about the changing of season and the foods as a joke just before, but I really think both teams struggled with that change of condition. There was a lot of dew on the ground. There was a little bit of earlier rain, and you take away the torrential conditions up at Newcastle a few weeks ago and the Bulldogs Roosters that night at a Core Stadium, it's probably the first game they played in those conditions where a little bit of extra water around and the ball gets nice and slippery. So I don't think either teams managed that. All the tries in the games came off kicks. They'll flip fifth play options and just the bounce of the ball, whoever was around, like Jerome Hughes was running the hole off a bit of ad-lib play. So it didn't reach any great heights. And the fact that Robbo's sort of come hard after around those rulings, I think he's taking a little bit of heat off his team and where they're at the moment, because you have to, despite struggling with injuries and players coming in and out, after their start to the season over in Vegas and the couple of games after that, they've really slipped from where they were.
James Tedesco, who was just fined for tripping, was that enough? Was that a binning, did you think, Gerds? Was it worthy of?
Oh, no, it looked like it was a reaction. Not that it's right, but, some refs are going to look at that like, there's more intent and they're going to give him 10 in the bin. I was happy with what happened on the night. That can happen sometimes.
Yeah, I think if it's up the other end of the field and he's maybe in a try-scoring position and he gets beat all ends up and he sticks his foot out, well, then that's probably deserves some time in the bin. But because he was racing through on a kick chase.
On a wet night.
Yeah, and sort of just got wrong-footed and reacted. We've seen in the past, I think Josh Reynolds had about 10 fines in a row for that action. So fines enough.
Yeah. All right, as for the Storm, they sit currently anyway halfway through round 7 at the top of the table.
The Masters are winning the close game, the Storm at the moment. They've just got that resilience, that character that they had for a long, long time in that footy club. They seem to have it every year, and they're winning the games that are in the balance.
Well, that's the worry for the rest of the composition is the Storm of they're sitting at the top of the table, and they have been good within all their gains without being great.
Yeah.
And you just have to feel like at some stage when they have Munster and Hughes, Pappenhausen, Harry Grant, Nelson back, once they're all on the field together and spend some more time and they start to hit their straps, it's a bit of a worry because they're nowhere near their best at the moment, and they're still sitting on top of the competition table.
Yeah, they've won 5 games and probably been the better side in 2 of them.
That's true.
And you've still, and you spoke about, Nelson came back on the weekend. Munster's still not sort of full of running. So, just getting the job done. They'll go into the origin period, but they're setting themselves up for a really successful back end of the season.
Let's have a little look at some of the stories from the week. Talon May. Now, he's dropped out of the Panther side today. He was actually originally selected. What's been the upshot from his issues with that Instagram posting of him in a passenger seat with somebody driving at ridiculous speeds through city streets?
Well, the club is saying it's got nothing to do with that, Tony. Mm-hmm. And they've reiterated that. It's a personal issue. It's got nothing to do with the Instagram post that caused a bit of drama during the week. So
quite rightly caused drama.
So have the club disciplined him for that, or they're just leaving that slide?
Well, not that I know of. Wade,
what about the game itself? Is this being investigated, or where is that?
You've caught me off guard there. I didn't check.
Read the rundown.
But I don't think they are. I don't think there's a major issue with it, from what I understand. But I could be wrong.
Well, there should be an issue.
Let me check and I'll come back to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, you just do that with use your thumbs on your phone. Because we spoke to, well, disappointed me. Remember we spoke with Taylor May, 3 weeks ago? And
yes.
We were really, so great. It was a terrific discussion with a young kid who I guess a few people outside of Penn don't really know much about. And we dug a little bit and we were talking about what he might like to do, what he does outside of football. And he talked about having a social media presence. That's not the presence you want. The idea that rugby league players, some of them don't, they don't see themselves or think they should have the responsibility of being role models, but they are. It doesn't matter if you want to be or not. If that's where position is, then
young people look at you and they take that in and drive that.
Yeah, I think at the lower end of the scale, it's quite silly. But at the higher end, it's quite dangerous too.
Absolutely,
right?
It's dangerous,
particularly where it was. And he's got to know, you know, where that range is and what he, you know, what he's happy to take part in or not take part in. So, again, I was blown away. I love that interview that we had with him. He spoke so much more, and opened up a lot more than I thought he would. He was really authentic, happy to answer all the questions. And we walked away from that going, that was a brilliant chat. Yeah. And this is just a little blip on the radar, but. Yeah, it was a silly thing to do and a silly thing to be a part of.
All right, other young players. Ethan Strange, now he's an extension he signed with the Raiders.
Long-term one, Tony, till the end of 2028. So good signing for them because he's been really good this year.
Good. He's a good kid, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching him play up at Suncorp tonight. It's going to be a great contest up there up against Ezra Mam. And, yeah, I think it was the difference last week. He came up with that play, you know, to put him in position to get that field goal. And he's having big moments like that. He's physical. He's got great footwork. And traditionally we've seen, you know, big 5'8s come out of Canberra like that. You know, he's got that little bit of look about him. So he's a great foil for Jamal Fogarty, who's in good touch as well. So he's been in their system for a while. I'm not sure where he came from originally. I think he might have been from Central Coast. But, yeah, I mean, it's a big commitment from a club to sign a young guy to such a long-term deal. What is it, a 4 or 5 year deal? So, it is a big commitment, but yeah, they obviously know how he trains, how he prepares, and they're now seeing him put it into practice on a weekly basis.
We talked about the Roosters and that performance, and as we said, the coach talked about the officiating rather than the performance mainly. Joey Manu, they looked at him. He was playing in the centres. He was so brilliant in fullback the week before. But when they want things done, he's a man you want the football in his hands. Now, he's not going to be there. It's official. He's off to Japanese rugby. So they lose him. Joseph Suali'i also is going to rugby. Jared Warrior-Hargreaves won't be there next season. They're big holes.
Huge hole. He's gone for at least 1 year, potentially two. Just quickly on Taylor May, the NRL Integrity Unit are still investigating that, Tony. So,
okay, good.
Yeah, no update at the moment.
Right,
but yeah,
you'll fill us in if you get anything.
I'll get you one during the show. But Joey Manu, a huge loss for them because he is their most, he's been their most influential player this year. Swali, you said it. And the other guys we didn't mention, Daniel Tupou probably won't be there next year, I wouldn't have thought. Luke Keary is sort of a year-to-year proposition, although he's contracted for next year. They're big holes to fill. Again, it feels like their window is now.
Yeah, well, you see, they always seem to manage to recruit the right players to fill the right holes, so I wouldn't be jumping off that ship early. And again, you talk about storylines being around the Fisher Harris and the Panthers' motivation. Well, there's fair motivation there. Manu, Jared and Swali'i, the big characters at that club, and they'd want to send them out on a high. And I just, purely from a selfish point of view, like, I can't believe Joey Manu's leaving. Like, he's my favourite player in a row. I'm going to have to find a new one now. So I'm going to start looking at some resumes and getting some things handed in, boys. If you're anyone out there listening, I'm taking on a new favourite player.
That's right. You're getting invited to the board. I'm on the hammer. The hammer's my favourite player. Come and jump on. Yeah, it's funny, the Roosters, you know, they've had the last couple of seasons where they've really started the season poorly, and then they've come home with this this wet sail where they've, some, you know, I think they forced their way into the finals last year, the year before they did the same. And so it's kind of funny how when they need to play a certain style, when the chips are down, they can get it together and the motivation's there. I remember it was around 22 last year, and people are saying, can the Roosters win the comp after the start that they have? And they've done it again. You know, they've won one out of their last four games, and finding themselves again about to go into the Origin sort of period where they'll have probably three or four guys, and then struggling through that, and then coming again. And is it going to be another season where they just leave their run too late? And what ends up happening, they have to work so hard during that period to get those wins, and it takes so much out of them because every win's like, they need to win this one, you know, to make the finals. And then by the time they get to the finals, they're one of the form team of the competitions, but they've worked so hard to get there. All of a sudden, you know, some of those other teams that get the weekend off or whatever are a little bit more rested, just take advantage of that. So Yeah, they've certainly got the talent to give it a shake, but for some reason, early parts of the season, it's just they just can't perform how they need to.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum.
I'm pretty sure we're close enough now to start seriously talking State of Origin teams, aren't we? I know we try to put it off for as long as possible.
Post-daylight saving.
How many more games?
Six.
Six weeks. Yeah.
Still a lot of water under that bridge.
Never too early to talk Origin time.
No, I'm not asking you to commit, but I think we just throw a few ideas and run a few things up the flagpole, see who salutes. That's all we're saying. Mm. Michael Maguire, of course, who is the New South Wales Origin coach, he says there's 40 or 50 players who are in the mix as we speak. Now, he talks about this, and, you know, you guys who've played in Origin, that character will be a key selection factor. Now, obviously, the talent part is inbuilt, and you'd imagine, you know, that's part of the equation, but that character is a key thing. And I guess, given the kind of environment you go into to play, it is important, Wade.
Yeah, well, I think for, you know, Madge has had a long time to think about this. He's been proactive with the things he's doing in the Blues space. He's organised an old boys catch-up not long ago, which I went to. It was a whole lot of fun.
A lot of character shown.
Yeah, well, it was funny for – did we speak about it on here? You might have been away, so you might not have heard it. Okay. So. It's
the show's very big in America.
So talking about Origin is like my favorite thing and my favorite memory about Origin was when I was a kid. Right, I used to sit on the couch and watch with my old man, and you got to stay up and watch Friday night footy because it was a weekend after and we're playing footy. But Origin was a school night, it was a Wednesday night, so Dad used to let me stay up after bedtime and I'd watch Origin, and you know, I loved it, and I love watching guys like Gerds and Freddie Fittler and Joey, and as my footy career grew. And I had some goals. Well, I wanted to play Origin. I want to be those guys. I want to be one of them. That's what I want to do with footy. So when you get into a room and you're sitting with those guys, you sort of feel like a bit of an imposter, right? Like, because you look up to these guys and love them so much. It's the fact that you're sitting in that room with them and they're your idols. It's sort of not an awkward situation, but it's a surreal situation. And it was fun. That was my first one to be a part of, and I'll certainly be going back to him because I enjoyed it. But just on Madge, I think, and his origin, he's at heart, he's a club coach, right? He knows what it takes and has a vision of what it looks like to be successful at a club. He did it with South Sydney, and he's been involved in our system. So he would have a clear plan of how he wants to run his week, and he'll have a clear idea of how he wants to his team to play, or what he wants it to look like and what he expects in certain areas. So when he mentions, you know, players that'll be in his team or a character, it's the characters that suit his style and suit the way he wants to execute his game plan. So he's confident in his ability. He understands what it takes, and he's excited for this challenge. And I think he knows exactly what he wants his team to look like, and he's going to pick the players that execute that for him.
Yeah, I think being an experienced coach is key there, Wado, what you spoke about. I mean, just understanding the media. He's not affiliated with a media outlet. So I think that he's been in the industry long enough as a coach that regardless of his selection, regardless of all the outside noise, I don't think it's going to alter his direction. I think he's going to be really strong around, which is really hard because, you know, you've got there's so many passionate people about a State of Origin. Everyone wants to have an influence. Everyone wants to pick a team. Everyone wants to tell you what's wrong. Like, all of that noise would become deafening, I would imagine. And I just think he's kind of the single-minded personality that could actually go, well, you know what, this is my team and I'm either going to – and I think he's shown, like, with memory – what he's done with the Kiwis. I don't know how long he's been in there, maybe 4 or 5 years. He's been pretty loyal. You know, there's a pretty big talent pool now for the New Zealand Rugby League team, and they've had a fair bit of success under him. And from memory, you know, that was it last year when they got beaten by Australia convincingly in the first game. He stuck with the team for the series. They came back and beat Australia convincingly in the final. So I think he's got a record of basically just picking guys, trusting in them, and them doing the job for him. And I think that's really important at this level. So I kind of like the fact that he's coming in with that sort of attitude. Attitude around picking guys with character. Everyone knows ability is just a prerequisite for even coming into a conversation. So he's got some principles around how he wants to pick his team, and I'm excited. I think he's going to do a great job.
Well, I would imagine that there's always character's always an issue when you pick a state of origin team. I know what that says to me when I hear Madge say that is obviously there's some players in previous teams in recent years that he thinks didn't fit the mould of an origin player when it comes to character. That's what I see when I see those comments, because I'm sure Freddie picked blokes on character as well. I'm sure Billy picks guys on character. That's what coaches do, right? Character always plays a part in your selections.
But like Madge's characters might be different to a Freddie character, and Billy's character might be different to both their characters. Yep. What we know about Madge is he appreciates hard work. He appreciates commitment to defence and that hard edge. Like, you think about his best teams like the Sam Burgesses and Benny Teos and guys off the back fence, and like, he's not going to shirk any work during the week. So they're the type of guys he's looking for. And I agree with Gerge where, and again, to reiterate, like, he knows in his mind, I think he's crystal clear with what he wants his team to look like.
He says 40 or 50 players, but he knows. There's no way there's 40 or 50 players.
I'm not talking necessarily personnel. I'm talking about what the style he wants his team to play, and in his mind, he can see how he wants to execute it. So now it's just about getting the right people in to execute that style of play.
He'd have an idea of that, though. Surely won't.
Yeah, well, it's hard this far out. There's still six games. Like, we saw a couple of weeks ago the carnage that happened in 1 week. Like, our game is brutal at times. So if you want to write down a team and expect that's a team you're going to get in 6 weeks, like, you're kidding yourself. So he would have an extended squad in his mind, and, you know, if it's picked tomorrow, he would be able to pick his team from where it's at right now. But that might change from here to that, like, here till game one, for sure.
The Blues won the game three convincingly, but with a new coach, does the idea of incumbency just go out the window and he has free rein to go wherever he wants to?
I think it does. I think Madge starts from scratch. There's some players who are going to be there. We know they're going to be there. The guys like Nathan Cleary. You know Nathan's going to be there. Payne Haas, if he's fit. You know Payne Haas is going to be there. But I think he starts from scratch. You know, that was a dead rubber, that game. I know they say there's no dead rubber in Origin, but there was nothing on the line in that game. And some of the guys who played in that game haven't been playing that well. So I think Madge starts again.
Well, and the thing is, too, for this series, is game one's in Sydney. It's so important, game one, is we get game one done and get it right, because the second one's in Melbourne. You don't want to be heading up to Brisbane for a decider, right? So we need to get game one as right as he can, and what he thinks he can execute in game one. We need to get game one done.
All right, we spoke earlier, and just a reminder that the Dragons won last night. we did speak about Zach Lomax quite a little bit. Shane Flanagan was also asked about him and his chances in State of Origin.
He's in good form, without a doubt. We all knew he's a good player, and he's, you know, playing well in our footy team. He's doing a good job, real good job.
Does he deserve to be in the Origin discussion plan?
Well, Ben thinks he does. Being a Queenslander, but without, I think he needs to be discussed. You know, let's be fair to Inkham about it. You know, he's form winger, form centre. He's just in form. So, you know, in Origin, you need to have players like that, and he comes up with big plays at big moments. You know, and I think, you know, in Origin, that's what you need. So I think he's got the temperament too as well to play in Origin. So it'd be, you know, a good winger or a good centre to keep him out.
Yeah, for a man to contest the ball in the air, he's certainly that. But there are a lot of great outside backs going around at the moment.
Oh, there certainly are, Tony. But there's no one more informed. But when we come back to that comment from Madge about character, need to make sure that we're picking the right people to come in there as well. And Zach obviously is a different personality, and that's spoken about openly within the media. He's obviously made that decision to go to Parramatta mid-season. And there are all little things that might actually, you know, come into calculations for Madge. His form can't be questioned. But, you know, we haven't seen him play a lot of finals football. He's never played rep football at that level before. So we really haven't seen him in that environment. And that is where character, you know, it comes from. Those sort of experiences that you can fall back on. Because when you get out there and you're 15 minutes into Origin game, especially if it's your first series, and you're thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Your character is definitely tested.
Well, I think his coach just gave him a bit of a rap in that area when he said he's probably got the temperament for that arena, because, you know, I mentioned before about going to the lunch and feeling like a bit of an imposter there after playing some games. I think he walks in the camp and probably goes, you know what, I do belong here. He's got that confident attitude. As long as he keeps the foundation and the base of his game heading in the right direction. Like, if he keeps carrying hard out of the backfield and chasing those kicks, he's always going to have the skill to come up with the big plays. And we know what, if he can do that at that next level, take care of his, you know, the hard work and the hard areas of his performance, he's the type of player that can come up with something special in those moments when you need it. So for sure, I think, listen, there's a lot of talented players out there who are going to be in the conversation, but he, the way he's playing right now, if he carries that on for another month, yeah, he's going to be in the picture for sure.
I think if the team's picked today, he's in the team. I think Joe Swalee might be on the other wing as well. There's a lot of talk that he's well and truly in the mix. Can you imagine those two blokes having Nathan Cleary put bombs up for them? There's some weapons.
You wouldn't have Tall in there.
The rumour is he's struggling. No, he may not be there.
Wow.
Wow. Really? Come on, mate. You just told us. This, okay. This is a Queensland, mate.
Any
of our listeners,
just
don't buy into that, mate. Brent Reed, beat it back up there to Queensland. Anyway,
it's the mail.
We're going to Brisbane. We'll obviously dig deep on Queensland over the coming weeks as well. Who was best on ground, by the way, at the Old Boys, just very quickly?
Josh Morris.
Josh Morris, best on ground.
Well, this is the thing with J-Moz. He normally drinks mid-strength beers.
Uh-oh.
But at the True Blues, it was full-strength beers. So if those boys are out there proper practice, they can sneak up on them.
It's a Saturday scrum. The Paul Green medal, obviously, it's a name and a man who means so much to both the Sharkies and the Cowboys. So it's an important game tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. I was down there this morning. The Sharkies boys wrapping up their preparation in time for the Paul Green medal tomorrow night in the game. And a couple of nice stories out of there. First, before we get to Paul and the game, a young local junior debuting, Sam Stonetreat on the wing.
He love this,
had his family in there this morning, and he spoke about the jersey, and his favourite player was Luke Cavell. He played all his footy at Dealer, which is the fields across from Shark Park. So it's a special time for him and his family to have a local junior debuting in the suspension for Sione Katoa. And just on the Paul Green medal, from a Sharkies perspective, it's a massive game for us. He played, you know, over 50-odd games for the club. He won the Rossmans medal before it was renamed to the Dally M. And I think the first game it was played, we had Paul's wife, Amanda, and his daughter, Emma, and his son, Jed, in the sheds. And I don't know if anyone remembers, it was the moment Nico Hines, he won the Paul Green medal and passed it on to his children. So it sort of cemented how much that game meant to us, the reaction of the family. And Paul also had close ties with Fitzy from the Roosters days and to Josh Hennay, our assistant coach from the Cowboys. And just another twist of fate about storylines and how they go sometimes, and it's beautiful in our game. So Braden Ueli plays his 100th game in the NRL tomorrow night. And originally he was at the Roosters, coached by Paul Green in the juniors there. Paul Green recruited him up to the Cowboys. He debuted under Paul for the Cowboys before he moved to the Sharks. And now he gets to play his 100th game in the Paul Green medal. So he was there today and he spoke about it. He was quite emotional. And it's just, I sat there in the back of the room, and it's quite a personal story. And I thought I'd share it because, you know, a lot goes into every game, but every now and again you get a real special game for your team or your club or for something that's more important than just what you're competing for in the week. And it was just a nice moment when Braids got up there and accepted his jersey and, you know, spoke about Paul, who had such an influence on his career.
That is so good.
Great touch.
So good. Is it a 6 o'clock game tomorrow evening?
It's a four o'clock game.
Well, should be full out there for that. All right. The other game, just wanted to quick touch on is tonight the Des Hasler taking on Manly.
The Des Hasler Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've both gone out of the way to avoid talking about it. Yep. I know Des got asked about it and Steve got asked about it, but Manly put up four players for media this week, and none of them played when Des Hasler was there, and none of them were at Manly when the Pride jersey fiasco happened. So Manly have gone out of their way not to sort of talk about Des and his what happened in the past. But it's a huge game for Desi.
Yeah.
A huge game, because they have battled all season. They've been very, very average.
Did you give them any chance, Ryan?
Look, I think the fact that they've settled on their halves, Brimson comes in closer to the action, Kieran Foran, another guy that'll be looking to have a great perform against his old club. But, I think Jaden Campbell's out this week, so Sami moves back into the fullback position. And just Manly, the way that they've been playing, the way that they attacked the Warriors playing over there in New Zealand last week, the win against the Panthers, I think their form at the moment is just going to be a little bit too good for the Titans, who are slowly getting better tone, but I just don't think that's going to be enough today.
Read about it. Read about it. Reedy's Mail.
Sometimes Reedy's Mail just comes from his own information and off his own bat. Sometimes it comes at a question that I posed to him earlier today about Taylan May. What is happening with Taylan May?
I wasn't prepared. So I did a bit of digging while we were off air. And there is an ongoing investigation. That investigation is still going. It's the NRL and Penrith are working in conjunction on that.
So this is in regard to the Instagram post?
In regard to the Instagram post of him in a car that was speeding, obviously breaking the speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no decision yet, no decision on a sanction. So obviously he's not missing that game today because of any sanction. But obviously Penrith are working with the NRL on it. So at the moment I suspect there won't be a sanction, but we'll find out soon enough, I think.
Okay. Watching with interest last night and seeing the Dolphins, who, as we said, put 8 tries in the second half on Parramatta to that win in Darwin. But they had the interesting little patch, the white sticky tape over something on the front
of
the
jersey. Well, they did for a while, then it all started coming off, didn't it? But they've got a sponsor, a medicinal marijuana sponsor, that's across the top of their jersey. And this was not an NRL edict or a club edict to cover it up. They actually got a letter from they were contacted by the Therapeutic Goods Association, I think it is, TGA,
okay,
just before kickoff and advised to cover it up. So
go ahead.
I think I was going to ask the same question. So the issue is actually with that type, that brand, instead of the actual medicinal marijuana.
I think it's a bit of both. The fact that what's on their jersey is a medicinal marijuana company, that's what the TGA has an issue with.
So the actual company, not the product?
No, well, I'd say a bit of both probably. I don't think they've got an issue with the company per se, but advertising that sort of product on advertising it publicly like that, I think that's at the heart of the issue. So
you think the TGA would have bigger issues to consider?
Obviously not.
The NRL doesn't have an issue with it?
The NRL had no issue. I mean, because all those jerseys get approved. All the advertising on them get approved before you're allowed to wear them. So the NRL didn't have an issue with it.
Yeah, but sales of white masking tape went through the roof.
Well, shades when the RLPA pulled out the green masking tape all those years ago. Remember that?
That wasn't all that years ago. It was just last year.
Last year, okay. Yeah. It felt like a lifetime ago. Oh, God.
Doesn't it? The TGA must be one company they don't have shares in. They've got shares in the rest of the funds who are distributing.
That's
right.
So that's an ongoing issue. They're going to have to resolve that, I'd imagine, this week.
Well, given it's medicinal marijuana, it could take months for them to resolve.
Tony, you sound like you've just slipped a cup.
I am a bit peckish. Jaden Sewer, he's sticking around. What's going on?
Well, he has been outstanding in recent weeks. Ever since, I think, Flano gave him a bit of a bake, Jaden Sewer, he's been one of the form sort of back rowers in the comp. And he's had an offer sitting on the table for weeks now. And basically what happened was the Dragons made him an offer and Jaden Sewer and his camp thought, well, that's not enough. We think we're worth more than that. We're going to keep playing and prove to you we're worth more than that. And that's where the situation lies. As I understand it, that offer hasn't been improved. It hasn't been changed. And there's some clubs obviously looking at Jaden Sewer now as well, I'd imagine, around the game. So,
well, in terms of what he's trying to do, he seems to be successful. I mean, he's playing great footy.
He's playing great football.
In terms of an advertising hoarding, it's doing very well.
So, you know, I think the Dragons got a fight in the hands with Jaden Sewer. I know they'd like it resolved, and I'm sure he'd like it resolved. But if he keeps playing the way he is, his price keeps going up. And if he ends up playing Origin, which he's a chance of doing the way he's going, he's a chance of playing Origin, then that'll push his price up even more. So,
well, it just depends. His price only goes up if there's genuine interest out there.
Yeah, so I think there is. I think there is some interest.
The ball's in the Dragons' court, right? He's playing. If he starts playing better footy, and other clubs do come interested, well, the Dragons will have an opportunity to match that. So I don't think they need to panic.
I don't think they are panicking.
I just like questioning your mail to make sure it's
Yeah,
it's actually correct.
You're into me today.
Yeah.
Look out for
Brian.
Ever
since you said Tor was out of favour, I just started to question.
I didn't say it was out of favour.
He said he's not going to get
so he was under pressure.
Oh, my God. Did we just hear that? Can we replay the audio? I'm pretty sure he said he's out of favour.
I didn't say that.
No, you said he wasn't going to be picked. You said it was. You did. You said it was going to be Joseph Swali'i and Zach Lomax.
I said there's a bit of mail going around that those two are in. If it was picked today,
you
those
said,
two.
You said, out of favour.
I don't
order.
Think I used the quote out of favour, but anyway.
Short, you said. we're 2 hours, 10 minutes into the show and we haven't talked about problems at South Sydney.
But, miracle.
So thank you, Brad Arthur and the Eels.
Well, these aren't problems. These are good things,
What's happening?
Well, it looks like Joy Arrow will be back for the next game. I think they've got Melbourne, maybe next game. He's been out with an injury that he's, I think it was a shoulder problem for memory, a tendon issue in his shoulder. He rehabilitated that rather than undergo surgery, which would have ruled him out for the rest of the year. And they're pretty optimistic he'll be back for their next game. So that'll be a big in for South Sydney.
Yeah, it's a big one too. Like they backed themselves to rehab that shoulder instead of surgery. But if for some reason he doesn't get through that game or the next couple of games, and that reoccurs, that injury, it's not going to spell good news for the Dry.
Well, he'll be
gone. Not those types of injuries.
He'll be gone for the year. And Shaq Mitchell looks as though he's about to sign a new 2-year extension at South Sydney as well. So some good signing, positive signing news for that club.
For King G, you wear the crown. This is Triple M's Saturday Scrum. Believe it or not, believe it or not.
Good stat, isn't
so
it?
So we're still holding out.
The award ceremony in Morpeth. It's a glittering ceremony, that award ceremony. Yeah. You don't have to wear black tie or anything. It's good. Yeah, thongs will do.
I was going to say it's footwear.
Not unnecessary. Okay. Unnecessary. Just a pair of, I mean, best going out
I've never been
thongs.
Invited. I'm really disappointed because it sounds like the night out.
Oh, look, you can be my plus one, if you like, this year.
Okay.
All right, believe it or not, because we had some golden point time that ended in a draw, the first one for this season. Believe it or not, golden point is fine just the way it is.
Me, I don't believe it. Okay. I think we've seen with the NRL, they're happy to change the rules in the name of, you know, a better product and better entertainment. And I just think we could adopt some similar ideas that from overseas and some of their sports. I like the idea of having just a 10-minute extra time where you can score a field goal or you can kick a penalty goal to go in front. But the only thing that stops time is the try, the maximum amount of points. It allows the referees to still be confident in making their hard decisions. And it probably takes a little bit of pressure off teams taking so many attempts at field goal because they can set up to score tries. And then if they still fall into a position to take the lead, the opportunity is still there.
So you say that if they kick the field goal, that's not an instant
not
win.
It, no.
The other team has to get a chance at the ball.
No, you just play. You play for the 10 minutes, 5 minutes either side. The only way you stop time and stop the game is if a try is scored. That's the end of the game.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with the way it is, Tony. I think it's exciting enough and I don't think we need to tinker with it. I'm good with it.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of a draw anyway, where both sets of fans go home disappointed. It's terrific. What do you think, Gerds? Believe it or not, golden point is fine.
Yeah, I believe that it's okay, Tony. I mean, I don't mind the fact that we go into like a different game within the game. So, even though it does frustrate some people, it's a skill set on its own to be able to sort of get your team around, deliver the sort of the ball where it needs to be delivered, and then the advantage of having a guy there that can nail it under pressure, I think that all adds to the spectacle. So I'm cool with it the way that it is.
Yeah, I still do have a problem with maybe both teams don't get a chance with the football if they go up and kick the field goal off the first.
Seeing earlier this year, I think was it in Vegas before halftime, someone kicked a field goal and they checked it because the player was offside. They took the field goal away. That disappeared now all of a sudden in Golden Point. They don't check the field goals.
Yeah. Well, they checked ahead to check Epi Korosau's kick for goal the other day.
Yes.
off the post. All right. Believe it or not, Ryan Girdler, the disruptor rule is stupid.
That is, we've brought in some ridiculous rules over the last couple of years. That is the most ridiculous rule. Do you know how many times at training guys are running through disrupting catches? I mean, it's what you do. They're so used to it. It's part of the game. I mean, the game wants to take collision, out of the contest, and that's another way to do it. You're not having any sort of collision. Guys are just running through, making a nuisance of himself. I think it's the most ridiculous rule change, and there's been some ridiculous ones, but that's right up there, Tony. So, I believe it.
Yeah, I think it's an unnecessary rule change. I didn't think we needed it. I didn't think it was a major issue, and I've got no problem with blokes balking guys trying to catch the ball. And there's an art form to it. There's an art form to catching it. There's an art form to.
Yeah, I was going to say you could just intend to the ball like Zach Lomax has been doing. Yeah.
Can you make noises even if you don't run through? I mean, or is that like how far are they taking the disruption? Can you run through and go boo, or do you just have to run through, be silent, and still not participate?
The boys have ridiculous. Said enough. The boys have said enough. It's garbage. Throw it in the trash.
Okay. Yes. Believe it or not, New South Wales, Brent Reed, are the underdogs in this year's Origin series. Without Brian Tott.
Of course they're not. They've got 40 to 50 players to choose from, according to Madge. Queensland's got about 18. Queensland are always the underdogs, Tony. That's the way Origin is. That's when Origin is at its best. When Queensland are the underdogs, and they will be again this year.
You can't manufacture that.
I never thought I'd wish Shemus was in the building right now more than anyone else.
It's the way it is. I bet you when the markets open, Queensland will be the underdogs. We always are. And so we should be, because it's backs to the wall stuff.
No, but that's just something of your own invention. That's not reality.
This is how good Queensland's going. They're not going to be able to pick both Caelan Ponga and Reece Walsh in the same team. That's not more heavily favourites in any competition I've seen.
You might leave Latrell out.
Well, Tall's left out apparently already, so Reedy's picking our team now.
There you go. That's how good you're going.
So you don't believe it?
I don't believe it.
Okay. Ryan Girdle, New South Wales are the underdogs in this year's Origin series, believe it or not.
No, I don't believe it, Tane. We'll go in as favourites. We do every year, regardless of who's in the team. I think they had like four or five immortals in their team, future immortals in their team at one point, and we still went in as favourites. So that's just the way. Apparently, just people in New South Wales want to put more money on the Blues, and people in Queensland want to back the Maroons. So we'll go in as favourites. Doesn't matter, though.
All right. Believe it or not, and I'm trying to get my head around this question as I read it out. Believe it or not, the inconsistent form this season proves the competition is closer than ever before. Waito?
I don't believe it. I think, even with Penrith's dominance over the last couple of years, or last 3 years, sorry, there were still teams competing against them, and they just weren't given those wins. And below them, our competition is the closest in the world. There's no other competition where fourth fall out of the finals, four come up from the finals. At one point, there was 1 year in my career, I think, the top four was all separated. They were on the same amount of competition points, were separated by points differential. And then the bottom four of the eight were on the same amount of points, and the only thing that separated was points differential. So it was 2 points between eight of the teams. I just think it's as close as a competition can be. Now, how Penrith's going to handle the news of Jay Fisher-Harris leaving, the reaction, I don't think it's the inconsistent form. I just think it's always close, our competition.
Gerds, do you believe the inconsistent form is...
Yeah, I do, Tone. I actually think if you look at some of the sides that struggled last year, like the Tigers and the Dolphins at times, I think they're better this year, and they've showed that in the early parts of the season. I think other than the Titans, who obviously haven't won and are really struggling, most of the rosters look like they've improved on last year, and some of those rosters at the top probably have come back to the field a little bit. So, yeah, I believe there's a bit more balance in the competition this year. Yep.
Yeah, I'm with Gerds. I think it's a little closer, not a lot closer. I still think Penrith are the team to beat, but it's a little bit closer just because Penrith have got a little bit weaker.
All right, and finally, believe it or not, Jai Gray should remain the Rabbitohs fullback, Gerds, for the rest of 2024.
I don't believe it, Tony. I think form's going to be everything. And when Latrell comes back and maybe they put him in the centres, I don't know, but he's a young guy and he's obviously had a good start in his NRL career, but he's going to need to perform on a weekly basis just to be picked in first grade, regardless of what Latrell's doing. So if he's good enough, he'll be there. If they feel that Latrell's going to go into the centres and it's better for the team, they'll do it. If not, well, they've got some options. So that's a positive for South.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think Jai Gray is the fullback for the moment, and I reckon when Latrell comes back, he'll be in the centres. But I still think Latrell is their best fullback. And at some point, Cam or Graham will come back into this team. He'll be fit. You've got to find a spot for him in the centres. So I think Latrell will end up back there eventually. I just don't know how long it'll be before he is back there.
Yeah, I don't believe it exactly the
we
same.
We agree again.
Agreement. Wow. I think if you
dark
say
days.
You put Latrell in at left centre, which is the position, where do you put Jack White? And you put Jack White in the six, you move Cody to the other side of the field. They've all played left side. Campbell Graham comes back in. All of a sudden, you're creating more problems with cohesion and the way that team's going. So I think he comes back in at fullback. And to be honest, in their situation, doesn't even matter what position he plays. They need to shore up their defence and shore up their errors. Like, you can play 13 latrells out there if you want, but until they're willing to defend and not concede 30 points a game, they won't win games until they can tidy that up.
All right, there is your Believe It or Not for this week.
Triple M Footy lives on Listener, thanks to McDonald's and Ream Hot Water.